Hello and welcome to this week's Inside Education. Our website is insideed.com, where you can listen to or download podcasts of all previous Inside Education programmes. I'm Sean Delaney and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes or so. My guest on this week's programme is a Kerry man who gave the graveside oration at Brian McMahon's funeral. When my guest retired after 30 years as principal of the special school Scolheroine, he worked as a teacher educator in the Merino Institute of Education. He spent a summer working in a school in Mbakwe in southwestern Zimbabwe. In his spare time, he's a keen photographer and a cyclist who has cycled from Mizenhead to Malinhead on a number of occasions. I'm talking this week to Eamon Omoraku, who is a founding member and who has lifelong membership of IATSE, the Irish Association of Teachers in Special Education. When I met up with Eamon Omoraku, I wanted to learn about his reflections on a career in education. I shall bring you those reflections on the programme this week and next week. On next week's programme, we'll focus on Eamon's experience as a leader in special education from a time when it was a relatively new area in Irish education up to the present day. But this week, we focus on his own experience as a pupil in primary school, on his relationship with the well-known teacher Brian McMahon, and on the time he spent in Zimbabwe. I first asked Eamon to tell me about his own earliest memories of his school days.
Well, I grew up in a town of Listowel in County Kerry. And I remember well, actually, when I went to school first. I'm a twin, and Brendan and myself went off to school. And we were taught, my first teacher's name was Mrs. Scanlon. And I suppose we all remember very fondly our first teacher because of the impact that they make. But there's a great story, incidentally, told about my mother meeting Mrs. Scanlon in the street shortly after we attended school. So she decided that she would ask Mrs. Scanlon how we got on. And she went across the road and she said, Mrs. Scanlon, she said, how are the boys getting on? And Mrs. Scanlon looked at her and said, well, now, Mrs. Murphy, she said, I have worse, don't you pity me. And maybe that gives some indication as to the kind of lively pupils we were. But I remember very fondly my first class. I remember using the slates and the chalk and the marla. And she was a wonderful person. She taught us actually in the local library, upstairs in the local library in Listowel, Carnegie Library. And she was a marvellous, warm, affectionate woman who incidentally had more than 60 pupils in her class at that particular time. But she was wonderful. My other teachers that I remember very fondly, I then went into infants class, which of course was a big promotion. And I still remember Mrs. Crowley dancing across the classroom and she teaching us the alphabet, apple, BB, bird, CC, cat and so on. A wonderful teacher. Then, of course, in third class, I had the great Brian McMahon. Brian, who was a lifelong friend and who was a huge influence on me. I think, actually, that one of the reasons I became a teacher is that I wanted to be like Brian McMahon. His classroom was just sheer magic. He used stories so much. On a Monday morning, the first thing that he would do was gather us around him and he would say, boys, guess where I was at the weekend? And then, of course, shortly afterwards, he would ask us, what did we do with the weekend? Teaching me, of course, later, something very important, that you can't actually ask children to share their confidences with you unless you do it with them. But he was a wonderful man, and as I grew up and as I went to college in Dublin, I kept in touch with him. And I remember actually he coming to Dublin to visit me as a young teacher where he came to my class. I remember that very, very exceptionally. I also remember that in 1982, when I was president of the Reading Association of Ireland, I invited Brian to give the president of the address at the conference, and that was a source of great pride for me as well.
The memories that you describe there of inspiration and happiness would be different probably from other people at the time who might have had memories of maybe corporal punishment or difficulties in school. Was it that you were particularly privileged, or was it that it was that you've forgotten some of those kind of more negative memories?
Well, as I say, school for me, particularly primary school, was a very warm, pleasant experience. Now, of course, there was corporal punishment in the school, but it was part and parcel of what was there. But I remember very fondly my teachers as being kind, caring people. I remember Frank Sheehy, incidentally, who taught me in sixth class, an extraordinary teacher. He was also chairperson of the Kerry County Board and the Munster Council afterwards. But I remember he teaching me history, actually, and he doing the world line where he actually traced developments in Ireland with those that were happening at the time in Europe. So to answer your question, I have very warm memories, but yes, corporal punishment was used, and indeed it was used in me and probably needed to be used from time to time. Post-primary school, for me, I went to St. Michael's College in Listowel, where again I had a very, very good education, did Latin and Greek incidentally, which I think stood to me very, very much. That was a harder regime. And I do remember very much corporal punishment in that school. But again, I have to say, I think that was the system. I think when we look back, we might be unduly harsh if we are maybe too critical of the teachers concerned.
Can you remember any of Brian McMahon's stories that he would have told you?
Well, I mean, to say one of the ones he taught us about Jack O'Morna and the King of Ireland's son. He told us stories about circuses. He told us so many stories. And not only did he tell us stories, but you see, this was unique about Brian. Brian then went back and he'd say, I want you, when you go home this evening, to ask your grandmother about. So they were full of stories. We had little notebooks, I remember. In fact, talking about notebooks, something else is flashing into my mind. We used to have this small little penny red notebook, tiny, I suppose, maybe 2 inches by 1 inch, it would be that small. And he had us going around, gathering words. And for instance, I'd say to you, Sean, I'll give you Constantinople if you give me transubstantiation. And so on. Extraordinary things, you know. And he was, I mean, they say, he was the born teacher insofar as he was an actor, he was a singer. I hesitate to say it, but he told lies right, left and centre to us in order, to get us going. He was the provocateur. He had a tremendous presence, you know. And he, again, I remember actually, during the summer of 64, we were all supposed to go home and do teaching practice in our own town. And we were supposed to spend 1 week with each teacher from roughly infants to sixth. And when I came back after the summer to college, I came back in fear and trepidation because I hadn't spent 1 week. I'd spent most of the time in Brian's class. And I remember I went back and I said to my supervisor, I said, look, I didn't spend time in every class. And he said, why? I said, because I spent most of the time, I said, teaching with Brian McMahon. And he said, weren't you lucky? And I was. Extremely lucky. Incidentally, talking about teaching practice and so on, not so recently, I had occasion to go back to St. Patrick's College to do some research on my grandfather, who attended St. Patrick's College. And while there, I asked for permission to look at my own records, which I was given. And I was intrigued to see my reports on teaching practice, which, generally speaking, were reasonably good. But there was one criticism of my first teaching practice. Incidentally, I have a copy of it, and I enjoy it greatly. And the reservation that they put down was, he speaks English with a countrified accent.
Presumably a Kerry accent.
A Kerry accent, absolutely, absolutely.
And Brian McMahon subsequently came to visit you in your own classroom. How did that come about, Eamon?
Well, again, Brian and I were great friends, and of course I was growing up, I kept in constant touch with him. He gave me my reference to St. Patrick's College, incidentally, of course. Then I began teaching. And, of course, each time that I'd go down to Listowel, every time when I'd return home, one of the first people that I would always call on was Brian McMahon. And when I came to Dublin was a wonderful place to be in the 60s. And I got involved in every and any organisation. And I became involved in the Reading Association of Ireland because of my interest in the teaching of reading. And I had the great pleasure and the great privilege to be president of that association. I think it was in 1982. And one of the things you could do as president was invite the keynote speaker to your annual general meeting. And, of course, the only person I wanted was Brian. And Brian came along and gave a wonderful talk, which he called Silence, Intimacy and the Lamp. And that talk, actually, was the genesis of his book, The Master, where he talks about, his teaching and so on. And he gave a wonderful, wonderful talk at that. Then I became, as I said, I started teaching actually in 1965, taught in the Sacred Heart School in Ballygall. And I asked Brian, would he come up and visit my class? And I'll never forget the sense of pride that I had when Brian came up. I remember sat on the at the front of the class and began teaching my class the same way as he taught me many years before. And again, he told them the story, and he had them eating out of the palm of his hand. He had an extraordinary ability to do that. And of course, Brian himself started his teaching career in Donore Avenue. Not in Listowel, but in Donore Avenue. And there's a great story in his book about how he started in Listowel and so on. Subsequently then, I remember actually nominating Brian for the accolade Kerry Person of the Year, but I never let on that I did. And indeed, when the result was formally announced, I wrote him a card congratulating, but never pretending it had anything to do with it. But of course, he found out. And he sent me an open postcard, and I'll always remember it, and it's a lovely card. He said, Eamon na Chara, he says, Quirim and Milan are fod ar fad ortsa, ac fi mwynta war a chw I gwni lom in awm an gwrthyr agus an awm an chelwyrwy. Eamon, I put all the blame on you. But the Amorokus were always there for us in times of celebration and in times of need. There was a very close bond between our family. My own father was a writer as well. He was the first chairperson of Writers' Week, and he and Brian were very, very close, very, very close. Indeed, I remember when Brian was not too well in the Bansagore Hospital in Tralee, going in to visit him, and he spoke beautifully about my father. In fact, I remember coming out and writing down immediately in a piece of paper some of the things that he said. Extraordinary man, very, very kind man, very, very lovely man. A man whose philosophy, incidentally, and he used to often tell this story, when he was a young boy himself, he was out fishing in a curragh by Dunhuin, and the fisherman picked up a mackerel and explained to him that no two mackerel are alike. And Brian often talked about that, and he obviously thought about that. The fact and the reality that no two anything in this life are exactly the same, whether it be blades of grass or the sand or whatever. And he was very strong on the reality, and this influenced all his teaching, that no two people are alike. And he said that was the great challenge in teaching. So Brian's teaching was characterized very, very much by a sense of celebration of that uniqueness and a sense of challenge to accommodate that diversity. And that's why I think he was such an extraordinary man, a man before his time. And I think, of course, I would have to admit, I think I was different in his class. And he gave me my head. He gave me my head. I could do what I liked in Brian's class. Now, he kept an eye on me, and I probably wasn't the easiest of pupils. And he tells a great story, incidentally. My father told this story, but my father and himself were going up the road one day, walking up the road, and Brian turned to my father and he says, Louis, he says, I'm afraid of a confession to make. He says, I was very, very hard on your son today. And of course, my father responded, well, I'm sure if you were, he says, you had every reason to be.
And you've written a bit about Brian yourself, or you are writing about him, isn't that right?
I've written a lot about Brian, actually. I had the great pleasure, first of all, of he actually asked me before he died to give the oration at his grave. And, of course, I kind of pooh-poohed it, and I said, not just yet. But I did, and I remember it was a huge challenge to do, but it was an extraordinary privilege, actually, to do that. I then had hoped, in fact, to write something definitive about Brian, but I think I got lazy or whatever, but I have a whole lot of material about him. I mean to say, I talked about his philosophy of life there. I talked about him as a teacher. And, of course, as a writer, he was just quite extraordinary. Written some wonderful books. The one I probably like best is The Children of the Rainbow. And there's a beautiful piece, I don't have it here, but he talks about the importance of somebody coming in each generation that will pass on, you know, the tradition to the future. And that's what he did. He tried to pass on to us everything that was valuable. And he loved tradition, but he didn't view tradition as something that was musty and old. He viewed tradition as something that we should take from the past and relate it to the present and bring all that richness and enrichment to it. And of course, he loved Gaeilge. I remember as a very small boy going back with him actually to the Kerry Gaeltacht and so on. And he loved Irish, and he loved the Irish language and everything about it. He loved ballads, and of course he wrote ballads. And again, one of my favourite ones is The Town of Listowel. "Or Puck may be famous and God will be grand, and the proud of Tramore go down through the land. But I'll barter their charms I would upon my soul for a week of the races in lovely Listowel." And it goes on like that. He wrote some other lovely ballads. He wrote a lovely ballad about the River Field, the River Field, of course, that flows through the town. And incidentally, he had a son, Gary Lord Marston, who was a wonderful ballad singer, who brought out his own CD, a wonderful, wonderful ballad singer. Extraordinary man that I think of almost every day, and I smile in recollection of him. Great man.
You also visited schools in Zimbabwe more recently, Eamon. What did you learn from that experience?
Well, that was a transforming experience, and that arose from my work in Colosterwood in Merino. I happened to be working, and I heard about the REAL programme, which is a programme which introduces students from the college at the time, now from other colleges as well, to go abroad during the summer and work on missions. And I got very friendly while in Colosterwood with Brother Joe O'Neill, another Kerryman incidentally. And eventually I began corresponding with the mission in Zimbabwe and began interviewing prospective students for the experience. And then suddenly I said, I would love to go. But despite the fact that I had read and had contacted the mission in Zimbabwe, nothing could have prepared me for what I saw. And when I arrived eventually in the bush in Mbakwe, I was perplexed and worried and disconcerted at the great poverty that I saw, the tremendous poverty, the illness that I saw with AIDS and so on, and the devastation that that was causing, the famine in the area and so on. And I remember thinking that actually if I could have got out of that place in 2 or 3 days, I would have come back to Ireland. I found it so difficult. And sitting at the meal one evening, a nun said to me something very important. She said, "Eamon, when you go out tomorrow, will you look at things through African eyes and not through your eyes?" And that was the key, and that was the secret. And I enjoyed my time immensely there because, again, the people, I used to say, you know, despite, but now I'm saying because of their poverty, they love the simple things in life. They love their children. They loved their environment. They were people of great pride and a great dignity. I learned for the first time ever probably what mission means. Mission means service. And the brothers and the nuns and the people working in the school there. I mean, Sunday was extraordinary. From early morning, you would see the people walking through the bush in their beautifully multicolored clothes. And Mass was so vibrant. Mass was a celebration in prayer of their own dance and their own culture and their own singing. And I remember thinking we would revitalize what goes on in our churches here in Ireland if we brought, because we have a rich tradition of culture and prayer and liturgy as well, but it's not at all evident in our churches in Ireland, unfortunately. So working in Zimbabwe was a tremendous experience and a great, great privilege. I was there twice. I went out for 2 summers, and I hope to go back again. I remember when I went back the second time, it was like returning home. The welcome I got was so much. And people have asked me when I returned, what is the most important thing that you did? And I think the most important thing that I did each of those 2 years was spend time with them. I remember one of the brothers there saying actually that I did something quite extraordinary that he never saw anybody else do. When I was finished work each day, I used to go out into the bush and meet the people. And they would call me. They called me Brother Eamon. And despite the fact, incidentally, that I told them that I wasn't a brother and that I was married and that I had 3 children, I was still Brother Eamon. But Brother Eamon was invited, I was invited into their homes. And the little they had, they shared with me. I remember actually one extraordinary story. This was the second year. When I went the first time, I saw this woman literally breaking ground with a pickaxe. I took a photograph of her. And I went back the second year and I saw the same woman working with her grandchild on her back. But this time actually she was plucking some tomatoes from those plants, because in the meantime they had sunk their own well, you know, and so on. And I remember she giving me one of those tomatoes. And again, that's the generosity of spirit that I'm talking about. Really, really wonderful people.
You're listening to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Podcasts of previous programmes can be downloaded from iTunes or from the website insideed.com. My guest this week is retired principal Eamon O'Murchu. I next observed to Eamon that he himself had had a happy time as a teacher and he obviously found it fulfilling. But would he advise a young person today to go into teaching?
I would if they liked children. It's a wonderful job. And I know we talk about the stress, and there is stress there, and there's lack of resources and so on. But there is nothing as exciting or as exhilarating as being in the front of a class and seeing those young receptive minds and realising, now mind you, it's a frightening thought as well, about the influence that you are going to have forever over those people. Incidentally, when I was lecturing in College to William Marino, the last talk that I used to give my students each year to both the third years and the postgrads, I used to make 3 points to them. And the first point was that the most valuable gift that you will give to your pupils is yourself. The second thing that I used to say to them was the scarcest resource that you're going to have in your classroom is time. And I used to caution them in relation to that, because teachers of their very nature are so generous. And I used to say, give time to yourself first and foremost, and to the people and the things you love. Because it's that enrichment that you bring into the class that will make you different to anybody else. When I think of the great teachers that I worked with, as I say, what they gave was themselves. Their family experience, their interest in literature, their interest in the environment, their interest in people. Because a teacher must have passion in relation to what they're doing. If you haven't got a passion for what you're doing, I'd say, please get out of it, because you're doing yourself no favour, you're doing your pupils no favour. But if you have a passion, and if you're flexible, and if you're creative, then anything will happen. Anything can happen in a classroom. I remember, I think it was Pádraig Hogan. Many, many years ago, I was asked to write an article, many years ago, for the Education Studies Association of Ireland in professionalism. And Pádraig has an article in the same book where he talks about that fusion, the fusion between the dynamic teacher and the susceptible pupil. And that fusion can yield anything, irrespective of ability. And that's why teaching is such a wonderful, wonderful job, despite the stresses and the strains and the exactitudes and so on. The other great thing about primary teaching is actually primary teachers have great freedom to do whatever they want in the classroom. I really, really mean that. I know we have a curriculum to follow, but that curriculum is so flexible and is so geared towards the individual and towards the community from which they come, that there is ample opportunity to make that curriculum really alive, wonderful, imaginative, and yet real.
Are you concerned at all about the deteriorating conditions of employment for beginning teachers?
I am. I must say, I would be very, very worried about that, Sean. And I'm particularly worried. I can't for the life of me understand why there is a difference now in the pay scale between teachers of 1 year and another. And I think that could do extraordinary damage. I remember indeed when the Common Basic Scale did come in, Sean Brosnan saying that now all teachers, irrespective of whether they were teaching at Leaving Cert level or at infant class level, were enjoying the same thing. And I don't like that kind of discrepancies. I can't for the life of me understand it.
You've written a poem about the influences on you as a teacher. Can you tell us maybe about how the poem came about, and then maybe read it for us?
Well, I retired, as I say, in the year 2000, and I was on my way to Athlone very sunny morning, and I pulled in the car because I said, this is my last meeting with my colleagues of principals in special schools, and I probably will be asked to say a few words. I said, what will I say? And I began thinking of my life as principal, and then I began thinking of the people who who I was so lucky to meet and who formed me in relation to that job. Because, as I say, I think teaching in the end is communicating all those kind of values and attitudes and beliefs that you have. So I was obviously thinking of my parents. I was thinking of Brian McMahon. I was thinking of my father-in-law, incidentally, who, when I was walking along the beach with him one day when I was a very young teacher, he asked me, "Cair de an muine is far? What is the best teaching of all?" And he said, "Muine cos chalig, teaching at the hearth." So all those things were going through my mind, and I based my brief talk on that. But when I came home, I looked at it and I said, this might be a nice prayer poem. And I wrote it, and this is what it says. Thank you. Thank you for my father, for his love of family, sense of place, gift of words, and service to community. Thank you for my mother, for her unconditional love and unfailing good humour. Thank you for my master, who taught me about the uniqueness of each individual human being and the importance of the celebration of diversity among humankind. Thank you for the priest who, through his own scholarship and refined dignity, filled me with a pride in the tradition of the primary teacher in Ireland. Thank you for the priest and best friend who is the humblest of men and the living and godly expression of community in action. Thank you for the brother who stepped in when everybody else stepped out. Thank you for the old man who proved to me that the most learned of men need never go to school, and that the most important learning of all is that which we receive at the hearth. Thank you for the Cork man, who proved to me that vision, when coupled with passion and commitment, can realise the impossible. Thank you for the Kerry man, whose inspired leadership generated a great pride in my profession. Thank you for the nun, who continues to teach me about love, vocation, prayer and grace. Thank you for my own special place, where I can reflect, renew and recreate. Thank you for three daughters who continue to live, love and laugh with me. Thank you for the son I never had, who continues to have a tincture with me. Thank you for my best friend and for the love she continues to give me generously. Thank you, Lord, for these your gifts, which continue to give voice and direction to my teaching.
And that was retired principal and teacher educator Eamon O'Murachu. I'll bring you the second part of my interview with Eamon on next week's programme. Well, that's it for this week's Inside Education. You can listen to podcasts of previous programmes on insideed.com or on iTunes. You can email me at insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. That's insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie for any suggestions for future programmes. Thanks to my guest, Eamon O'Murachu. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening. Thank you.